AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag. 'Twas 3 days before Christmas and all through the House of Representatives. Not a congressman read all 5,600 pages, but they passed a bill for the ages. Now it's $600 for you, so spend away, and bring back the economy too. What's it all mean? Where's the money going? Let's, ask Niefer.
Live from Tuesmas Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Professor O.A. Cleveland. Then we break out our Agra Abacus with Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen. In the final segment, Roger Johnson, former president of the National Farmers Union. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of Agra Talk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, yes, we are getting close to Christmas. We've got the spending bill. You no longer have to report on the pending bill, the debate over, the delays, the... You don't have to talk about that anymore. It's done.
What I'm really excited about is the fact that you wrote a poem for the opening of the show, brother. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
That's so terrific.
That.
Yeah. Really great.
I couldn't figure out how to wrap it up and get Niefer in there. I mean, what rhymes with Niefer?
Oh, it's a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a word they use out in Colorado, but inappropriate for this show, I think. <That's> is what it is.
Wow.
A little early for that.
I hadn't thought of that.
Good. You're on the right track, brother.
I wish I had. Holy smokes. Yeah, we have got a jam-packed show here this morning. We're going to continue our Outlook series. I think this is wrapping up our Outlook series, to be honest with you. And we're going to talk about what's going on in the cotton industry. There are many that we could pick from, but I don't know if we could get a better one than O.A. Cleveland. Looking forward to the conversation with O.A. And then Paul Niefer is going to be on. We'll talk about the stimulus package and specifically what's in there for you know what? No, I don't want to say specifically what's in there for the farm community, because there are some small business benefits that are in the stimulus package that also apply. I mean, you know, paycheck protection programs, stuff like that.
Right.
And then Roger Johnson, he kind of headed up an effort of the last four presidents of the National Farmers Union in an effort to reach out to President-elect Biden to kind of remind him, I guess, that the RFS and biofuels can play an important role in getting to a net carbon economy, a net zero carbon economy. There, I left out a word there, net zero carbon economy. And we're going to find out from Roger what he's thinking there. Okay. Let's get to it so we can get Annalisa on here.
Well, the particulars are the Senate voted 92-6 late yesterday to approve both the $892 billion coronavirus aid linked with a $1.4 trillion spending bill that will fund the government through September. The 5,600-page package passed the House earlier Monday evening in a 359-53 vote. And maybe it took so darn long to get this passed because they were all reading it. Can we make that assumption? 5,600 pages? I don't know if I've ever read a book that long.
You cannot make that assumption. As a matter of fact, I would not make that assumption. 5,600 pages is all of the Harry Potter books plus more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The bill now heads to the White House, where President Trump is expected to sign it into law, though it could take a few extra days to get the paperwork ready. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer said they're going to press to pass more assistance when President-elect Joe Biden takes office.
Yeah.
Backers of projects to capture and store carbon dioxide won big victories in the spending package, and what they say is a harbinger of increased congressional support for low-carbon technologies in the next Congress. The omnibus also includes a biennial water infrastructure package that would authorize spending for dozens of Army Corps of Engineers projects and studies across the country. Bipartisan negotiators agreed to a deal for unlocking and spending down the roughly $10 billion balance in the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. And one thing that I didn't mention earlier on, let me just jump backward a bit here.
Okay.
To get the compromise agreement, they agreed to drop both the funding for state and local governments and the liability protections clauses, which were the sticking points along the way. So they just threw those out the window. I guess they'll take care of it later.
No. I mean, when?
Yeah.
I would say that this is going to leave some businesses open to liabilities. You know, one point that I want to make on this, and I don't know if it's an important point or not, but it's just something that I feel like I need to get out there. These are two different bills. So I see people complaining that there is a $600 payment coming to citizens. Okay.
Right.
But in the same bill, Egypt's getting, Pakistan's getting, the Smithsonian's getting. And I can understand that frustration, but they're two different bills. The bill that looks really loaded up with all this spending is the spending bill. It's the budget that gets us through September of next year.
Right, okay? Right. And that needed to be done. Bill, that, absolutely, yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And you might argue that the only reason that the stimulus bill got done now is because they attached it to the spending bill. And I get the frustration over all of the spending on what may be determined, what you may determine should be unnecessary spending. I get that. I get that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But please understand that it's two separate bills.
Let me go fast on these last two. China reacted angrily to some provisions in the spending plan approved that measures the deal with Tibet and Taiwan, saying those are, hey, man, that's our field. And also, Australia's trade dispute with China is underway after the World Trade Organization confirmed their complaint just yesterday. Chip.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay, Davis, let's bring in Annalisa Laca. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How you doing, Annalisa?
I'm doing great. How are you, Chip?
Good, good, good. So here we are. We're looking at a milk market that is, it's well off the highs that we saw earlier this fall. And at the same time, they're looking at input costs going up with soybean meal in particular spiking. What are we doing with this?
So, you know, it's to your point, grain prices have been creeping higher for a couple months. So hopefully producers saw that happening and worked with their nutritionists to lock in some of those protein grains before we got to this point. $412 soybean meal doesn't really work for anybody in a dairy ration. I mean, that is really expensive soybean meal. So one of the things that we can look at is how to replace the degradable protein that we typically capture from soybean meal. There's a few options. You know, obviously, if you have high test haylage or even high test premium alfalfa on the farm, that's an easy way to bump your protein higher. Distillers grains are a good option. Corn gluten feed is a good option. Brewers grains, if you can get them. Blood meal, if you can get it and your cooperative allows it. And then, you know, there's always a last ditch effort to add canola into the ration, but we have to remember that that's a great source of crude protein, but it is not as degradable as soybean meal. So when we think about the value of degradable protein and how that cow is going to use it, canola is not our best choice.
Gotcha. Gotcha. But boy, I tell you what, you know me, Annalisa, I've always talked about doing the best job of marketing that you possibly can do. Well, part of that is making sure that you get your inputs purchased as best as you can as well. So it's all part of the process. So,
yes, all right. Learning that cost management's critical in this environment.
Absolutely. Annalisa, thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Thanks,
we'll talk to you next week.
Merry Christmas to you. Okay.
All right. That's Annalisa Laca, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. We're going to get into the cotton outlook next.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%. Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgro, and Bear Plus Rewards. Perform like a champion each and every season.
The Christmas prep has begun, buddy. It's begun.
It's begun?
It's underway.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My daughter Tess was over yesterday, and I'd been having trouble staying out of the Hershey's Kisses. She helped me make the cookies, so the kisses are safe.
Are you sure?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be pretty sad if, like, I have this plate of cookies and all the kisses have been picked off.
Well, I still have a feeling that that is how it's going to end up, you know.
It's possible. They're in the freezer now, though, so they're safe. They're in the safe zone.
Good. Hey, we're still trying to welcome back. Glad that you could join us this morning. We're still trying to reach out to O.A. Cleveland down at Mississippi State. Well, actually, he's a professor emeritus at Mississippi State in the Ag Econ department there, and hopefully we can get him here because I wanted to do the outlook on cotton with O.A. Mm-hmm. Davis, if we go back to, what was it, December 10th, when we got the crop production report from USDA, and I mean the crop production report, not the supply and demand report, although the supply and demand report was also released that day. If you'll remember, USDA cut a huge amount from the national average cotton yield, and that finally delivered a big cut to the cotton supply that, honestly, the industry has been looking for or had been looking for for quite some time. I mean, they cut 61 pounds from the national average cotton yield, took it from 911 pounds per acre in the November crop production report down to 850 pounds. That dropped the crop from 17.09. They made no adjustments to the harvested acre adjustments, but they took production from 17.09 million bales down to 15.95 million bales with the corresponding cut to total supplies. No imports, obviously, but we're looking at beginning stocks coming in from the 2019-20 marketing year of 7.25 million bales there. Now, that 7.25 million bales, that is snowballish for cotton. And what I mean by that is it gets to a point that you have such a big beginning stocks that it takes a near crop disaster, not just a short crop, a near crop disaster to take enough off of total supplies to have a meaningful impact on ending stocks at the end of the upcoming marketing year. In this case, taking that national average yield from 911 pounds per acre down to 850 pounds per acre, taking the crop from 1709 to 1595, total supplies from 2435 to 2320, so off 1.15 million bales there just in 1 month, I would like to say that it's had a meaningful impact on ending stocks for the 2020-21 marketing year, but we're still looking at a carryover of about 5.7 million bales at the end of the current marketing year. Is that bullish? Does that engage cotton in some sort of a battle for acres in the 2021 growing season? I don't think it really does. I don't think it does. And, you know, the way that the cotton market traded, not just following the supply and demand in the crop production report, mm-hmm. not just following that, but also last week. I mean, last week was the week that the market really decided, geez, we need to factor this in, right?
Yeah, front futures were up 304 points. But interesting, if you look at the chart, though, on that same contract, right now we're trading right around the top of that range from report day. Mm-hmm. So we had this huge run up to, you know, over 77, and now we're slipping back below 75. What are we at right now? Like right around, you know, 74.50, call it, at the moment. Okay. So we're kind of, you know, right back where we ended that report day.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great point right there. And how does that compare to the overall picture and what USDA is projected for a national average on-farm cash cotton price? This is not a futures projection, but a cash cotton price. 65 mm-hmm. cents. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's nothing special. That doesn't compete for acres.
No, not at all.
It is up a penny from the November projection. It is up from the 59.6 cents that we saw in the 2019-20 marketing year, but it's down from 70.3 cents that we had in 2018-19. So, you know what? We had a 70.3 cent price in the 2018-19 marketing year, and planted acres went from 14.1 million in 2018 down to 13.75 in 2019. So it did nothing. It did nothing to encourage more acres. Now, the 59.6 cent price that we had in 2019-20, that continued the downtrend. We've been looking at a downtrend in cotton acres for quite some time, and it's because of the potential that we could get to a snowballing beginning stocks number. I feel like we're almost there. Now, a lot of that is going to depend on what happens with exports, of course. USDA in the last supply and demand report went from 14.6 million bales up to 15 million bales with that increase going to China. Okay. So everybody is expecting not only is China going to be a bigger importer of soybeans, be a bigger importer of corn, be a bigger importer of pork. I should throw pork out of that for the year ahead, but we're looking for China to kind of be that marker or that market mm-hmm. maker in the cotton export markets as well. And I don't know if that's completely justified or not, Davis.
Yeah. I guess I on the ground, you know, if I'm a cotton farmer, because it seems like, as I recall, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me here, but it seems like Texas took quite the cut to the yield.
Yes.
If I recall. I wonder if there might be basis plays in there somewhere.
Oh, sure. Sure, there will be. But most of the basis play, yes, supply is going to have something to do with the basis plays, but the biggest thing is going to be the amount of export demand and when it comes. I got to take a step back on that, too, because you look at the basis out of Texas, the Delta, and over into mm-hmm. the Southeast, that's one market, and then you got California.
for
your basis markets. Two completely different things. That California market, yeah, a lot of it's going to be driven by the export market, but the exports are still going to have an impact on what's going on in the basis market here in the Texas and in the Southeast as well. The one thing that on the export side of things, one last point to make there. Yeah. That I think is really important to remember is we're looking at a situation where, well, OA is here now. Let's go ahead and grab him
real quick.
Yep, OA Cleveland, how are you, OA? It's good to talk with you.
I'm doing great. Thank you. My pleasure.
Good.
Thank you all.
Good. You know what? I'm going to drop straight to the bottom line on this, OA. We've got just a couple of minutes left. What is the profit potential for a cotton producer into 2021?
I think 2021 is excellent, at least certainly on the front end. I'm looking for a market that can be anywhere as high as 80 cents and as down as low as about 67 cents. We are concerned certainly about consumption because of the COVID situation, but currently the supply chain is all but empty and it shot the market up to 77 cents. The old crop market, the sell-off resulting from this new stir about COVID, which this new strain we've known for a good while, but I think the market had gotten up too high, and it took a cent and a half or so out of old crop. But I think it's an excellent perspective, but at the same time, I think we have to be agreeable to think in terms of doing forward pricing at 75 cents. And then we'll just go from there. We have the opportunity to take the market higher, but I certainly would far guaranteeing it would go much higher than that, at least right now, given the current circumstances.
OA, I've only got about 30 seconds left here. Do we see cotton acres up in 2021?
We'll probably get our cotton acres back close to about 13 million acres. We had gotten down as low as on our forecast with prices down a bit lower than that. But now this recent surge has brought acres back. Cotton growers are back in the mix big time.
Excellent. OA, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. Appreciate it. That is OA Cleveland, Ag Economy Professor Emeritus there at Mississippi State. Thank you so much for joining us. When we come back, Paul Niefer, Clifton Larson Allen.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is ProFarmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. Jeff, big moves yesterday in the bean market, giving up a little bit right now, but you can't be too disappointed with this price action.
Oh, no, it's typical. You know, we made new highs overnight in beans and corn and meal. So, you know, it's a holiday week. If you got some profits, take them, go home. You know, the other thing that's probably putting a little pressure on the market is it does look like there's going to be some pretty good rains into that central Brazilian area. And we'll just see if they, we'll see how much there is, how widespread they are. But this period of, you know, we get this dryness, heat, then we get a rain. All that is adding into a situation where maybe crops aren't as bad as what the market has thought, but it's a long way to getting the crop home.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So we saw some volatility in the live cattle market yesterday. We've got a little bit coming back today, but we're under pressure. We're kind of doing battle with that 115 area in the Feb contract.
Sure we are. That's because the cash is only at 107, and we're hoping we're going to get a 108 or 109. So that premium really keeps the futures traders on the defensive. I will note that some of the deferred cattle futures have made new contract highs, which does imply a more bullish outlook. The hog story is, let's wait and see what the hogs and pigs report shows tomorrow afternoon. We're looking for the herd to be down 1% and the breeding herd to be down about 1.7%.
All right, very good. And we get the cold storage report this afternoon, right?
Right. That's going to give us some type of indication of how strong demand was both domestically and on the export side of the situation. We know we had big supplies in the last month.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. That is ProFarmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson right here on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize the National Corn Growers Association for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. So
All right. Welcome back. Glad that you could join us today. Davis, the point that I wanted to make before we got OA on there about cotton exports is we can't just look at China, because all of Asia is a potential market. Mexico, Honduras, there are many other markets out there for us on the export side. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's bring in Paul Niefer. Paul is a CPA, Clifton Larson Allen. You know him as @FarmCPA on AgWeb, on Twitter. He joins us right now. Mr. Niefer, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, good, good. So let's stay away from the ag-specific items in the stimulus bill for right now and just talk small business items. That farmers need to be aware of?
Well, I think the biggest thing or the biggest thing they need to be aware of is the PPP program. There's multiple changes there, all of them really positive for farmers. First, you know, we've been dealing for the last almost 10 months now, 9 months, that the IRS said, hey, the farmers weren't going to be able to deduct their expenses related to loan forgiveness. Congress finally came out. Now, there was a big battle with Secretary Mnuchin on this, but they finally came out and said, okay, everybody, farmers, whoever it is, they're going to have completely tax-free income, and they get to deduct all the expenses. Plus, they even expanded if a farmer got the economic injury disaster loan, that's now going to be tax-free and the expenses deductible. So that was really good news. So that certainly is the biggest one. Now, there was a couple other items related to PPP that's good for farmers. A lot of Schedule F farmers on their 2019 return didn't show any net income. A lot of their income showed up over on, let's say, 4797 because of the gains on doing trade-ins. So Congress said, if your gross income, gross sales, you know, you sell some corn, sell some beans, whatever it might be, as long as those sales are greater than $100,000, we're going to allow you to get that $20,833 loan. So that was really good news. And this is strictly for Schedule F farmers, we think. We don't think it's for partners. And we know it's not for corporations. It's strictly for those Schedule F farmers. But there's hundreds of thousands of those farmers out there that probably are going to qualify for an additional loan amount.
Okay. So you said that the loans are forgiven. No tax on that? On that money coming in. Now, does that apply only to what farmers have received so far, or is that looking forward on the next $20,833?
It's going to apply for both the first phase of PPP, the additional phase of PPP, and then what they call the second round of PPP. So it's going to apply for anything related to PPP. It's going to be there. Now, of course, in order to get a second round of PPP loans, they have to show that in any quarter during 2020, their sales, their revenues, were at least 25% lower than they were the year before for the same quarter. So, for example, if they had, let's say, $200,000 of revenues in the second quarter of 2020, but they had $300,000 of revenues in that same quarter in 2019, they're going to automatically qualify, like you say, for that additional loan amount, whatever it might be.
Okay. All right. It seems like a big deal to me, Paul. I mean, right?
It is a big deal. And then another big deal, and we still need to get some of the details ironed out here, because, again, this is a 5,593-page bill. I think it's the biggest bill I've ever looked through. There's the employee retention tax credit, which was not available to any farmers who got a PPP loan. Now it is available to farmers that got a PPP loan. And all they have to do in order to qualify is they have to show, again, in one quarter in 2020, their revenues were at least 20% lower than it was in the same quarter of 2019. And I think there's going to be a lot of farmers in that area that are going to qualify. And that credit is based on wages, and it's 70% of your wages up to a maximum of $10,000 per employee per quarter. So, you know, some farmers, let's say they have $300,000 of wages, and if they qualified for, let's say, three quarters, they very easily might have a refundable tax credit of $100, $150, maybe even $200,000 that's going to come back to them, even though they don't owe any tax. So this is really a pretty good deal. Now, they can't use the wages that they used on PPP loan forgiveness for the credit. So that's why they got to be very careful to make sure that they put the proper amount of wages on the application and so on. So that's going to be a little bit tricky.
Okay. One of the notes that you made in your blog that you had on AgWeb, farmers who had a net operating loss during 2018 or 19 are now allowed what?
They are allowed to decide whether they want to carry that loss back 2 years, which is with the old rule, or they can decide to carry it back 5 years, which is the new CARES Act rule, or they can decide to carry it forward, which was always available. So really what it's saying is the IRS originally came out and said, if you carried it back 2 years, now you got to undo that carryback, file an amended return, carry it back 5 years. But this bill is saying, well, no, if you want to keep it at 2 years, you can. If you want to change it to 5 years, you can, or you can elect to carry it forward. So it provides a lot of flexibility for the farmer.
Okay. And of course, a lot of farmers are going to be eligible for the $600 payment, right?
Yep. $600 for both, for each mom and dad, and then for each of the kids that are under age 17 or a qualifying child.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. Anything in the ag specific items that we need to focus on here, Paul?
Well, I think there are certainly, it appears that some of the limits that were there under the original CFAP, you know, in CFAP 2, they sort of cleaned it up and made it more expanded. This appears now, it's vague language. It's just authorizing, you know, USDA to come up with additional, I'm going to call it additional funds and not have the limits based on entity structure. So I think that actually might be pretty good. We know there's another, $20 per acre for most of the growers out there that they're going to get. It also says that, let's say you're an apple producer, you raise apples, you raise oranges, whatever it might be, those specialty crops. And you had a bad 2019, you're actually allowed to use any crop insurance payments that you received in 19, or you can make an election, go back to 2018 and use the sales in 2018. So they're really expanding the amount of benefit there for the farmer. And then, of course, we know the cattle producers or the hog producers that had to euthanize animals and so on, they're going to be reimbursed for quite a bit of that. So I think it looks like pretty good policy to me.
That's the language that I've got in front of me right here. Directs the secretary to make payments to producers for losses incurred due to the depopulation of livestock and poultry due to insufficient processing access. That I know a lot of producers were looking for in this. Okay, the bill passed in 2020. Does that mean that the revenue needs to be recognized in 2020? I can't believe that I'm looking to defer revenue from 2020 into 21, but guys are going to be doing that.
Yeah, well, all of these provisions, there's no way a farmer is going to receive anything in 2020. I mean, we only got, 9 days left. FSA is going to take a while to come up with the rules. The PPP loan processing probably, I doubt if you applied now, you probably wouldn't get a loan until after the beginning of the year. So, the key is, all that income is likely going to show up in 2021.
Right. Okay. What else? Just step us through it. We've only got a couple of minutes for this. I can't believe I'm going to ask you. But with all of the sources of revenue that we're looking at, it could be a complicated tax year, right?
Yeah, this last year was complicated. This year is going to be even more complicated. It was good news that we got this final say on the expense deductibility, because I've been involved with, I won't say hundreds of farmers year-end tax planning, but it's been a lot of year-end tax planning. And it's like, well, is the expenses deductible? Is it non-deductible? You're trying to, decide, okay, do we need to defer some more income? Do we need to prepay some more expenses? Now at least we have some clarity. We got 9 days in order to, really bracket in what it should be. So that definitely helps us compared to still not knowing what the real rule is going to be.
Okay. All right. Anything specific for dairies?
They're making some changes over on the dairy side. I haven't had a chance to read that too much, but I know there's certainly some, you know, they're going to be selling, they're going to be buying additional dairy products, so that's going to help prop up the price a little bit. The margin protection program, I think they're enhancing that a little bit, so I just haven't had a chance to read through all that yet.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, what do you mean you haven't had time? Come on. There's only 5,600 pages to the thing.
I know. I got up at 2 a.m. yesterday and got home about, I think I finally got home about 7 p.m. So yesterday was a wild day.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make sure that you're handling everything right on this. I've got Paul on here. He's a CPA, and I'm not doing this to do a commercial for Paul, but get professionals involved in this, right?
Yeah, especially this year. This thing is, even though they're trying to simplify it, it is still extremely complicated. You definitely need some help. This isn't something you should do on their own.
Paul, when you spot something else that we need to know, give me a holler, okay?
I will.
All right, that's Paul Niefer, CPA, Clifton Larson, Allen at Farm CPA on Twitter. We've got Roger Johnson coming up next.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Farm Journal Foundation for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Glad you're with us today. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Davis, how does this sound to you? Blaze a new trail in harnessing the power of U.S. agriculture to protect our planet for future generations.
Trailblazing is what we do in America. It's what we do.
You bet.
We can't not.
I love it. That is one of the lines that was in a letter from all four living past presidents of the National Farmers Union. Covers 32 years at the top of the NFU. Those four living past presidents. And one of them, the most recent past president, is Roger Johnson, and he joins us right now. Roger, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm fine, Chip. It's good to be with you. I'm retired, and so I'm kind of rusty at doing these kinds of things. So you'll have to take it easy on me today.
Right, Roger. I don't think the rust is gathering on you quite yet, sir.
No, we're doing really well. We moved out to Colorado to be with the kids and the grandkids. And,
good.
You know, so far we haven't seen a lot of them. Hopefully by middle of next year, things will look a whole lot better.
That's right. Roger, tell me about the message in this letter that was sent to President-elect Biden. This is a pretty powerful message you've got in there.
Yeah, what is really neat about it and what got us to thinking about this is there are a lot of words in the Biden rural plan, you know, the campaign plan that he did for the campaign. And a lot of those words are really the kind of things that we want to hear. You know, it's like we've got to recognize that climate change is a real immediate existential crisis. And we've got to focus on what we can do quickly to begin to deal with it. And there's a lot of language in there about rural development and the role that agriculture can play. We, as the former presidents of NFU, just wanted to underscore that we think that's right, and that farmers, I think, will be eager, if they get the policies right, farmers will be eager to participate in this. We know that agriculture is the place where you can see the quickest greenhouse gas reductions, and you can see the quickest sort of emission credits that get credited to the overall climate economy if we get the policies right. And so, you know, it's important that they be incentive-based, that there be some sort of a value or a price put on carbon so that we can let the marketplace kind of drive this, and then you don't have all these other, well, let's do this requirement and that requirement. It's just get a good value on what we want farmers to do, and they'll do it. They'll figure it out.
Yeah. One of the things I found interesting in the letter, Roger, is that you went straight to California and the low carbon fuel standard as an example of how ethanol specifically and biofuels in general can play a role in reducing the carbon output.
You know, it's really amazing. Everybody knows that CARB, the California Air Resources Board, which controls the climate greenhouse gas emission policies in California, is one of the strongest in the country, maybe in the world. That they're very aggressive and that they're doing everything they can to try and reduce greenhouse gases. What people don't know is that two-thirds of all the reductions that they have banked so far are from biofuel consumption in California. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, that tells us that the technology right now is available to do some real good things. And if we get these incentives, right, as I've said before, and we can put a stronger incentive on even more environmentally friendly biofuels, we'll get this second and third and fourth generation that's going to essentially get to the point where we're going to have net reductions of greenhouse gases by consuming biofuels. And, you know, we're there already. We just need to get the incentives right so that the marketplace is going to double down on that.
Yeah, yeah. So, Roger, as we get to the 2022, I don't want to say end of the RFS, but changes in the RFS, we need to focus more on the environmental benefits rather than market access. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the things that happens in the RFS, as you alluded to, in 2022, the RFS doesn't go away. But what happens is EPA has enormous discretion to set these requirements at wherever they wish. And so we want to be sure that we're in at the front end of this and that we're helping them understand that, listen, you can do some really, really good things with the RFS if you get these policies correct here. There's a lot that's going to change in these next few years. And one of the things that we pointed out in the letter is that we should be focusing more on, instead of on E10, on E15 and E30 and E85. The sweet spot in there, in my opinion, longer term, is really E30. Because pretty much all the engines out there right now, without any modification, can burn E30, and it's significantly better for the environment, and it's cheaper right now than other gasoline blends. So, and that will create
and it triples demand.
Yes, exactly, triples demand.
Yeah, you know, if we can get fuel consumption back to pre-COVID levels, it would absolutely triple demand for the ethanol in the mix. Man, Roger, it was good to hear from you. I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying retirement. Have fun out there in Colorado. Merry Christmas to you, and we'll talk again soon.
Merry Christmas to you as well, and Happy New Year.
All right. That is Roger Johnson talking about this letter that was sent from the four living past presidents of the National Farmers Union to the Biden administration about how they can focus on ethanol, biofuels, to get to a net zero carbon economy. It's good stuff, Roger. Thank you so much for that. All right, everybody, come back this afternoon because we're going to keep the conversation going. We got Jamie Kawaki from Paragon Investments coming. And tomorrow morning, get this, Greg Ibaugh and Nick Giordano right here on AgriTalk.